Welcome to Novels with Nightcaps. I'm Allie from Brunch with Books, a book club for brunch lovers.
And I'm Melinda from Proper Endings, where I read and I bake things.
And this is our podcast where we discuss all things bookish while sipping on some nightcaps. And tonight, we're drinking Asadoradas, which is our book club drink of the month. And it's a spin on a Cuban... Oh, can I say this word?
We're going to find out.
Canchanchera?
Yes, I think that's right.
Canchanchera? Canchanchera. That's a hard word to say.
I have no suggestions. I don't know how to say it.
We'll find out if I said it right in editing. Yes. And you can find the recipe at booksbrunch.com. So it's basically like a hot toddy, but it has lime juice and rum in it. And
some mint in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think traditionally it's served cold. But when we researched it, apparently this was something that soldiers would drink to like wake themselves up in the morning.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So like the hot.
Also potentially unsafe, but it's fine.
So it's good for clearing the throat though.
I couldn't find limes. I couldn't find rum. I couldn't find
plantains.
What are those plantains? Chicago Instacart shoppers need to get better.
Gotta get it together.
At least learn what a plantain is, because I feel like that's part of the problem. They're probably just like, these are all bananas.
Right.
So
just really big bananas. I would have laughed if they got you like those really small ones, which we decided were called fingerling bananas. Oh, I love that. Anyway.
Moving on.
So,
what are we going to talk about first? Time to decide.
Yeah. How many books do we have here? I think we read 6 books since we last recorded.
I think so.
I guess we could start with the one that I was supposed to have finished last time.
Yeah, yes, let's start with House at Riverton.
Yes. So I finally finished House at Riverton by Kate Morton. We talked about this in the last podcast, but this was from, I guess it was from our first episode, right? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. So I don't even remember what you trashed, but this was the book that replaced it.
What Should Be Wild.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Forgot about that. So this was the book that was like taking me forever to get through. And then I finally got the audiobook, which helped it go by a lot faster. And the narrator, she was actually really good, so that helped a lot. it was really hard to rate this book because I'm still not really sure how I feel about it, because like during the book, like it wasn't one that I wanted to pick up very often, but when I got to the ending and I finished it, like I felt like good about it. It felt like I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was weird. I don't know. Like it's such a weird feeling. It's like, it wasn't something that kept me like really engaged, because I felt like it was kind of like long and drawn out, but like everything sort of like happens at the ending.
Yeah, it kind of flies through a lot of her life at the end. Focuses on one main part of who she was. But the woman's like 100 and the world changed like drastically. So her life is like all these different lives all wrapped up in one. But this particular book focused on one specific thing. So I do agree with you that I think it could have improved. I rated it very highly. I really enjoyed it. But I do think it could have been improved if all of those lives had been addressed rather than just a one.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially, I think because you said that. So for me going into it, I was expecting them to kind of talk more about the other lives that she lived. And it really was just like her young life as a maid and then her life as like an elderly dying woman. And there was like no in between,
just
really.
Snippets. Yeah, like, just like mentions of the other things.
Right. So you really don't get a glimpse into like that life that she lives just as like a middle-aged woman where she's like married and pretty well off, I guess, because she gets that gift. Which wasn't, yeah. It wasn't and really clear that she got that gift since she messed up, but.
Yeah, and the archaeologist, like, she's an archaeologist, yeah. And so, like, she goes from being a maid.
She went to school and everything, and they don't talk about any of that. Yeah.
But I think I'm like, I think maybe, like you, I enjoyed the ending. Like, the ending felt very, so much closure.
Yeah.
It was good. And so then the rest of the book, I was like, yeah, that's great. Yeah. You know, like, I let that lead me. Maybe yeah. A little too much. Yeah.
Yeah. I
enjoyed it.
It really, like, it was just so unclear, like, where it was going for me. Like, there really wasn't a lot of indication as to where it was going. And so the ending was, like, pretty surprising. Like, I didn't really see that coming.
Yeah. Which ending? When she's young?
Yes.
Or when she's old?
No. Oh, okay. Yes. The ending when she's young. Yeah, so yeah. I didn't know, like, how that whole thing was going to pan out. I definitely didn't, like, predict it happening the way that it did, which...
No.
I guess I won't. Yeah. Won't say in case anybody wants to read it, because it, yeah, is a really big spoiler.
Yeah. I didn't expect that ending either, though. So. Yeah.
That was a huge twist. And I don't know if I should mention, there was, like, another twist that was funny, because earlier on, I thought... So I guess I should say, like, for... people who haven't read the book, the main character, she's a housemaid for this family in Britain, and there's two daughters who are, like, around the same age as her, and she's, like, really kind of obsessed with them, like, in a way, but I think it's just because, like, she relates to them because they're her age, and she's, all the other, like, maids are older than her, so she just wants to, like, be a kid and hang out with the kids. But because of that, like, it just kept, like, she kept focusing on this one girl the whole time. And I was like, is this, like, a lover's thing? Like, is this going to turn out to be, like, a romance? And let's just say I was very wrong.
And I was just like, no.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Without spoiling anything. Yeah.
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 It would have been fine, obviously, if that's the way that it went. But no, it just tricks you like that.
Yeah.
The whole book tricks you into thinking certain things about particular characters. Like, one character I thought would be in the book a lot more. And he was not.
Yeah. Yeah.
That literally everything in this book is a spoiler.
I know, like, it's so hard to talk about this book without spoiling it. Ugh.
Yeah. So, but I guess that's what made it good for me, was that it kind of tricked me along the way.
Right. But
didn't do, like, what the one did with, like, the fake cliffhanger
thing.
It's just a very detailed, in-depth story about her relationship with this family. And how bizarre that is. Especially coming from modern day feelings. Because I'm like, first of all, no. You don't. Like, go home and see your mom.
Yeah.
And don't be like, well, I'm missing out or I'm not there for the family. The family can handle themselves. They're grown-ups. Just, you can go home and visit your mom. It's fine. So I did not have, that was a hard thing to, like, but it was probably pretty true, though. Like, the dedication to the families you worked for.
Yeah.
Because it's such a personal job. Yeah.
They do talk about that. I think, like, kind of toward the end, like, when they get into how a lot of, like, the service people basically sacrifice, like, having their own family. So, like, the family that they work for, like, becomes their family. So a lot of times, like, they don't have kids. If they do, like, leave to get married and have kids, it's, like, sort of, like, frowned upon. Like, that one maid that works with her, like, does that. Like, when she comes back to Riverton and she asks, like, where she is, and they're like, oh, she, like, ran off and got married. And it's, like, how scandalous that she decided to go, like, live her own life. How dare
Morgan,
she?
You can't. Yeah, how dare you fall in love? You monster.
Yeah.
But also, like, you couldn't have your job. So you have these people who are marginalized and poor, and they rely on you for everything. They live there, they eat there, they are at your beck and call, all of that kind of stuff. they have like one day off a month or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you look at them and go, oh, sorry, if you want to have your own life, you will also lose your job. Like, right. What kind of madness is that? Like, just,
I don't know.
Did not appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't read a lot of historical fiction. So I think going into it, like, at first I was like, I'm not going to get along well with this because I just like, don't really like the whole like aristocracy thing. Like, it's not that interesting to me. Like, the dynamics and like family drama, I can kind of like go either way. Like, a lot of times I don't really like to read about family drama, but I don't know. This was a really interesting one and kind of makes me interested in like her other books because she has so many.
Yeah. An insane collection of
a prolific writing. Author.
So
I think there were just so many things, like, I think I was telling you while I was reading it, like, I wanted to kind of just, like, shake her. There were so many things she did that were just so, like, stupid and irritating, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Yes.
How do you keep messing up, like, so badly?
And I kept trying to think how young she was.
Yeah, yeah.
At first. Yeah. But that's only at first. And then later, I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, she's also, like, extremely, like, sheltered and, like, naive about things, too. Yeah, so that was House of Riverton by Kate Morton. I think I said I gave that 4 stars. So I did actually end up liking it more than I thought I would. So
that's good.
Yeah,
I'm glad. I also gave it 4 stars. So.
It would make a really good movie. Just going to throw that out there, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I concur. For all of the Downton Abbey people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you would enjoy a film.
Yeah.
Or a miniseries.
It'd be like a film inception, too, because in the book, they're making a film about this woman's life. So it'd be a film within a film.
Yes.
A film about filmmaking.
So many good things. Yes.
So, yeah, that was a good one.
Should we talk about Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
Yeah.
Where'd You Go, Bernadette? I liked it. Thanks for sending it to me.
Yeah, it's a fun one. It's a light read.
It was.
Yeah.
It's a light read, but it's very comedic. I enjoyed the humor in it. It was a witty, kind of sharp humor, and I liked that. I personally loved Audrey, the insane neighbor.
Yeah.
Loved her. Thought she was great. I think because it's a real... It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the... What do they call it? That, the Pinterest mom.
Yeah, the, like, Seattle yuppie moms.
Yeah. And the one-upmanship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her yard had to be perfect. Her house had to be perfect. We got to make our school look like...
We talked about that when we read Southern Guide to Vampire Slaying, which I think they, like, take place during... I think they both take place during the 90s.
I think so.
Which that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the culture.
Man, stop competing with each other, moms. You're all doing fine.
Yep.
I don't have children, so I'm really not an authority on that, but I feel like you're all doing great.
Yeah.
But I related to Bernadette so much. She has no interest in going outside. She has almost no interest in her neighbors, but she is, like, polite in a standoffish way.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately is like, I don't need to befriend you. I have enough friends.
Right.
And I think it's just because I have an awkward personality. So going out into the world, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. But I really thought that she was great. And I thought she was a great mom despite everything that happens. That was,
yeah.
I liked how she was written as a mother. There are lots of themes about rebellion and convention, and I thought that people latched on to her as being rebellious, but I didn't actually find her rebellious. I don't know if you did.
I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, I guess, like, in a way, but just because she was going against, like, the convention of what all the other moms were doing, like, she wasn't interested in, like, their PTA crap, and she just wanted to, like, do her own thing and, like, be a person and not just be a mom.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't find her all that rebellious. I think because there was no feeling of it being intentionally.
Right.
Again, it's just who she is.
Yeah.
She is just not that stereotypical stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, which is, both are fine. the stereotypical version in the book is fine. She's fine. But I didn't find it very, I didn't find it all that rebellious. So I thought that was interesting as I went into it, because she was supposed to be this like crazy go against the grain lady. And I was like, she is like a green thumb who stays at home. Like, I don't understand. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah, she wears a fishing vest. That's about it. It's yeah. about the extent of like,
yeah, they do kind of make her, like, try to make her sound, like, weirder than she actually is. I think, like, the weirdest, it's been a long time, like, since I've read this book. I think it's been, like, 5 years.
Yeah. I'm behind. I'm very behind.
So, yeah, actually, it made me look it up, like, when it was published, because I was trying to, like, remember, like, when I read it, and it actually was published, like, in 2012.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, it came out, yeah, like, a while ago. And then I remember, like, shortly after I read it, so I think, like, a year later, they made a movie. I think it was...
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. So maybe it was more like 4 years. I don't know.
I just know Kristen Wiig was Audrey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And I love her, so...
Oh. Yeah, I never saw it, but... It's just, it was one of those things, like, where I actually felt like I was kind of, like, ahead.
Yeah.
That time, because I feel like I have never, like, read the book, like, before the movie comes out. So this time around, like, everybody was like, oh, look at this movie. And I'm like, I read the book already. So yeah. I'm cool.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Gold star, blue ribbon. So I was reading it, and I would actually like to ask... Tiffany Birdsong is the woman in our book club who is a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. yes. I would actually like to ask her how she felt about the husband.
Mm-hmm.
Bernadette's husband, whose name I can't remember.
I don't remember his name either.
And the whole part of trying to get her committed because Sue Lynn opened her big fat mouth. Sue Lynn. I wanted to erase her.
What a bitch. Like,
God, she was awful. I was like, listen, fangirl, get out of here. Like, this, nobody likes you. Gross. Yeah. She was gross. Her whole storyline was gross. She was gross. But the husband was gross sometimes too. Like, I'm not putting it all on Sue Lynn. He played a part in that, obviously. Yeah. But the whole, like, I couldn't tell if she was trying to write him to be a sympathetic character where I was supposed to, like, understand where he was coming from. Because mostly I was just irate that he, just never talk to Bernadette.
Right.
Just open your mouth and have a conversation with her before you try to put her in a mental institution like
that. I know. It was very, like, very old school, like trying to get your wife committed.
Yeah, so you can marry or be with this other. It's very, is it Jane Eyre where where the wife's in the attic? Yeah.
Yeah. I guess this stuff was still happening in the 90s. Probably still happens today.
Probably does.
Yeah, I don't.
But yeah,
I don't know. Like, I don't remember like having like a lot of like feelings like toward him. He just was like the very like busy like guy that worked at like someplace like Apple or like Microsoft. It's supposed to be like a like one of those like a made up like tech company that you're supposed to think is really big, right?
No, it wasn't made up. He was at Microsoft.
Oh, he was at Microsoft.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they didn't even make it up. Oh. She's like, this is what it's like in real life. Here it is.
I'm surprised Microsoft was okay with that.
Yeah, well. They were making AI as a band-aid. Read your brain.
It's true. That's they're like, hey, we could use some attention. So if you want to write about us, that's fine. Yeah. Even if it's negative.
Eventually, he seems to come to his senses and realize she's not an insane person.
Right.
She is a normal person and did normal things. I did really appreciate Bernadette as a character because she took ownership of like shitty things she did. But she was like, yeah, that was too far. Like she puts up the big mean billboard and she's like, yeah, that was probably too much. Like
the movie, I'm picturing someone else who played Bernadette. Was it Kristen Wiig?
No, Kristen Wiig was Audrey, the crazy neighbor.
Kristen
Wiig
was Audrey, that's right. Cate Blanchett, that's who.
Yeah.
I kept picturing her, and I couldn't think of her name.
I love her. She's brilliant.
And Maria Semple, the author, she was like a writer on Arrested Development.
Okay, that explains a lot.
Yeah, so I felt like the humor, like, you can definitely tell.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very Arrested Development, which I feel like I'm overdue for, like, watching that show for, like, the 100th time.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch that again.
Yeah.
Very soon.
We were just, like, thinking about, like, all of the shows that we've rewatched while, like, in lockdown. And that's, like, the only one we haven't rewatched yet. So I think it's time.
Yes. I agree with you. Do that. I'm going to put that on your to-do list. Like, I have a say. And this is what you should do.
Roderick has a cocktail idea for that one, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is the banana stand. It's going to be banana stand inspired. Yeah.
Yes, I love it.
Let's see. What other books do we read this month?
So maybe Dawn or Asada?
Yeah, maybe let's talk about Asada, because that was our book club book. And so we just met this past weekend. Yeah, it was a really good discussion. I think it's a really good group of people that got together to talk about it. And I think we could have kept going, like, for over, like, the two hours that we talked about it. Like, there's just so much to unpack here.
Yeah, it's a heavy book. Like, I've recommended it to literally everyone. It's a phenomenal book. It's very interesting, informative. It makes you think about your views on things and how you have learned about the world and what you think about the world. So I loved it, but I have told everyone, I'm like, but if you get an audiobook, it makes you feel all the feelings.
Yeah.
And it's not a good feeling. And so it's overwhelming to listen to almost. I think that you should maybe do what I did, do both. So you get the feeling and then you read it to retain the information, because, like, I couldn't get past, like, the emotion of it and retain what she was trying to tell me. I was, like, just furious and also guilty. And also she was yelling at me. Like, that's, you know, she's like, be better.
She's also she also told you to get your Elvis tattoo covered.
She sure did. Yeah. I fact checked that, though, and I don't really have to, but
yeah,
it's fine.
So I guess I should, like, I haven't summarized, like, any of these books so far, have I? So for those who don't know, Asada is an autobiography by Asada Shakur, which, if that name sounds familiar to you, that's because she is the godmother of Tupac Shakur. She was known in the media as Joanne Chesimard. So we were talking about that in the book club, like, how a lot of people weren't necessarily familiar with Asada's name and how that could have been because, like, the news always used her slave name, which was Joanne. So in the 70s, or it was 1973, she was arrested while there was a shootout going on, like, on the New Jersey Turnpike, and basically a white state trooper was killed, and there wasn't a lot of evidence, like, that pointed to, like, who did what, and so she ends up kind of, like, getting, well, she says she was framed for it, and she's maintained her innocence throughout her entire life since this has happened. And she was, like, she was the FBI's, like, most wanted woman for ever. I think she's, like, still the only woman that's on the FBI's most wanted. I could be wrong, but anyway, so she was, J. Edgar Hoover, like, had this whole, like, campaign to try to, like, find her. And even, like, recently, like, when Trump was elected, he had also talked about, like, bringing her back from Cuba. And so people are, like, still talking about this, like, to this day. Like, I feel like it just comes up, like, every few years, and then it goes away, and, like, no one's talking about her anymore. But anyway, so she had eventually, yeah, I guess I gave that away. Like, he tried to bring her back from Cuba. So she had ran off to Cuba, which is where she sought asylum, and that's now where she lives and where she wrote this autobiography. So that's kind of my clunky, all over the place summary of that book.
Rundown.
Yeah.
A little rundown of what's going on there. Yeah. It's a heavy read. It took me all month to get through it. That was, I think, one of the most poignant things about it, one of the things that sticks out the most, or why it remains so emotionally draining, is because that was in 1970 and we are in 2020 and it's the exact same shit that is happening all the time. So we have the whole, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and we're trying to be better, but it just keeps taking so long. We talked about that a lot on the book club conversation, is just like how long could it possibly take? Like, we should be well beyond the similarities of things that were occurring in this book. They should not be happening now. We should be well beyond it. And we're just not. And it's a frustrating and devastating thing. So when you're reading it, you're just frustrated and sad. And yeah, so it's a heavy lift. So when you go into it, know that.
It's, there was a lot to talk about with this one. I don't even know, like, where to start with, like, all of my thoughts on it.
I think that you made some really good points about, like, the punctuation, because I didn't start out reading it. So you guys noticed that before me, but how she writes, like, lowercase U.S., and then court is spelled with a K for, like, kangaroo court, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which
you wouldn't have picked up on, like, if you were listening to the audiobook. So I think that's another reason, if you can get a hold of the book, to do so, which it is kind of hard to get a hold of, as we talked about, like, published by, like, some little, like, indie publisher, like, in Chicago, and it's kind of expensive, like, for a paperback. I just don't think they, like, print very many of them, so it took a while to find a bookstore that carried it.
And I got the Kindle book just because it wasn't available anywhere.
I told you it was like
under review. I'm like, why is it under review? So if you get it on Kindle, there might be a disclaimer about it. I don't know.
So strange.
Yeah. And there were, like, I don't know, I have all these little notes about how it hits on oppression and racism and everything, but she, in the end, she's always hopeful. Just so bizarre. What a phenomenal person.
I think I was talking to someone about that. Like, just, like, her sense of bravery was really kind of crazy to think about, because she talks a lot about, like, her, like, school experiences and touches on, like, how the entire, like, school system is kind of structured to, like, keep people from really, like, thinking for themselves and thinking freely. And so everybody is basically, like, brainwashed into thinking the same way, which makes them easier to control. And just kind of thinking about, like, what kind of personality type it would take to rebel against that system, to be the kind of person that's just like, nope, I'm not gonna do this. Like, that's just, I don't know, like, it's hard for me to imagine, because in ways, like, I relate to it, and I think a lot of people can relate to it. Like, they look at that and it's admirable, but they also, like, couldn't implement it into their daily life, because we're all so, it's so ingrained in us to just be, like, rule followers.
Yep.
And even, like, the parts where she's, like, in prison and kind of, like, talking back to the guards, like, I found myself being like, oh, like, I wouldn't do that, like, if I was in that position. But and then it really makes you think about, like, why, you know, like, why do we behave that way, where it's like, we're so conditioned to just obey.
Well, and there's a safety element to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, like
self-preservation.
Yeah. In your self-preservation, you don't think about it as being detrimental.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a detrimental thing if your self-preservation means that you are always oppressed. And so she is, like, an insane, and her self-love, she's just like, I'm great. And I'm like, you are great. Like,
no, she's very confident.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too. She's very confident. She's very intelligent. So I think that was part of it too, where she was just like, I know what I know. So you telling me any different is not gonna. And I think that the scene at the zoo, when is it her mom who pretends to be like some visiting royalty, basically, to get them into the zoo? Was that the zoo?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Where her mom, somebody that she's with, they want to go to the zoo or they want to go somewhere, and this person puts on a show. So eventually they get in. And the confidence that you have to be that, to be like, I am a queen. You will let me in to see your zoo, and no segregation for me. Sorry. Like that.
Well, so I think, and even that theater scene, like, where she's like, what, like 14?
Yep.
And she's just like, yeah, I'm going to go, like, over to the white side and buy my photo of Elvis. And, like, nobody's going to stop me. And yeah. Even if they, like, put on a big show, because, like, all of these people, like, gathered around and all these white people are, like, pointing and staring. And they go and get the manager. And it's, like, this huge ordeal just because she, like, wants to buy a photo. So bizarre to think about. Like, because, I mean, like you said, like, it was long enough ago that things should have changed, but it also isn't that long ago, like, in the grand scheme of things. So to think that, like, that people were still segregated, like, when my mom was a kid, like, my mom was a kid,
gross.
Like, during this time, like, that's just so bizarre to think about.
We're spoiling all of this, guys. Sorry. when she's in court and she has her daughter, or, like, when she's, you know, fighting for her freedom, essentially, but she and, what's his name?
Zaid.
Yes. When they are together in the holding room, and then they fall in love, and they, you know, and her, she's so, like, yes, because my daughter will be a blessing to the world. Like, my child will be a blessing to the world, so it's fine. Like, I'm like, okay, well, that's definitely a hopeful way to look at it, because I'd be going, shit, I'm pregnant in prison. Like, this is not... Yeah.
It's terrifying. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that was, like, really what blew me away, was just, like, how brave she was to, like, go through all of that to make those kinds of decisions that I feel like a lot of us, like, in that position would not be bold enough to make. And really, when I think to, like, what she pointed to, I guess, like, in her childhood, it was mostly just, like, her grandmother telling her to always, like, think highly of herself and to not let herself be put down by other people just because they're white. So I think, like, maybe that was instilled in her, and so that kind of taught her to become,
she seemed,
like,
to have phenomenal role models. Like, get it, Grandma? Like, I loved her. You are the best. That's just the way it is. And that is stuff that you have to be told as a child, like, that, you know, the way that people talk to you is how you talk about yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you're building a personality and you're learning, you know. So if people are negative, you have a negative approach. And if people are positive, you have a positive approach. And I think that the people in her life must have been these, I don't know, aliens? I don't know. Because they were just, like, these superhuman beings who just were like, it doesn't matter that the world is stacked against me. I am good. I'm good enough. The end. Yeah. And then she's this huge proponent for, and I loved that within the Black Panther movement. I mean, like, that is so, like, Black Panther Party, sorry, the patriarchy within it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, she didn't even tolerate that. Like, she was fighting from all sides. Like, everything that she did, she was fighting. She's fighting off inappropriate advances as a child. She was fighting off the patriarchy within the Black Panther Party. So it, from all set, like, being a woman and being Black, she was just constantly having to assert herself as being worthy. And that sounds exhausting. And she just did it in this incredible way, in this, like, smart, well thought out. She knew what she was talking about. She took it, and she also took, when people would tell her things, she's willing to change her mind based on new information. And that's something that we just absolutely don't do anymore. So it was really great to see that as well. Like, somebody would tell her new information. She would look into it, and then she would build new or alter ideas based on that information. So she's all around great person. So I appreciated her.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking to one of the parts, she's, like, talking about how she, like, compares, I think it's, does she compare, like, minimum security prison to, like, living on the streets?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maximum security, she's in maximum security at Rikers Island, and then on the street is basically minimum security, right?
Yeah. Basically what she's trying to say is that, like, she never had freedom regardless of, like, where she is. So whether or not she's in prison or she's, like, outside of prison living on the street, like, she's being followed and being controlled, like, no matter what she does. So I think that was another, like, mentality thing that I just was trying so hard to, like, kind of, like, think about her perspective on that, put myself in her shoes of, like, if that's the way, like, you're viewing everything, then you probably aren't afraid to die because you don't have much to lose. And that was like the only kind of rationale I could see for like explaining like some of the things that she was willing to do that put herself in like so much danger, like choosing to get pregnant in prison and choosing to, well, eventually escape from prison.
Yeah.
You know, all very bold choices that could have like landed her like, who knows? I mean, but she was already like being put in isolation. What do they call it? In prison.
Solitary confinement.
Yeah, solitary confinement.
And essentially, we could go on and on and on about this because she is incredible. But also, we want you to read it, so we don't want to tell you all about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Basically, what we're saying is read this book. You should read it. I think we gave it, I gave it an 8 out of 10. And for very ridiculous reason. I gave it an 8 out of 10 because Fidel Castro, there's some Cuba stuff in there that I couldn't get on board with. But
yeah.
But ultimately, I understand, especially after Roderick pointed out that obviously she could not talk negatively about Fidel Castro because she was in asylum there. So that makes perfect sense. But that was my only reason for giving it 8 out of 10 and not 10 out of 10. It was just there was some fangirl of Fidel there, and I wasn't 100% still a dictator, even though he did do some things that were
Yeah.
But I think our book club gave it mostly like 9 or 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah, it got really high ratings. I'm still on my whole like not rating memoirs kick, so I didn't give it a rating. Yeah. I really don't know how to rate memoirs. All right, and we're back. So one of the other books that I had read since we last recorded was So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluo. And this was one that I, again, listened to the audiobook, and it was narrated by the author. And I think this is actually the one I read, like, I think I was already, had already started to read it, like, when we recorded last time, but I wasn't finished with it, so it has been a while. This is why I wish I had, like, a waterproof, like, whiteboard, like, in my shower, so I could take notes on it. Because that's, like, where I do most of my audiobook listening.
Me too. Yeah.
Do you have, like, the speaker in the shower?
We have an Alexa in the
in the
bathroom. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this, like, little, like, puck, like, hockey-looking puck thing that's, like, in our shower, a Bluetooth speaker. And that's, where I do, like, the majority of my listening. And I've always, like, I've even looked that up. I'm like, why does that not exist? Like, how is there not a waterproof dry erase board?
Just get the bathtub crayons, like little kids.
Oh, that's a good idea, actually. That's where I have all my best ideas, in the shower.
Oh, I love it.
That's a really good idea. I'm totally going to do that now. So this one, I feel like I kind of like got through this one like pretty quickly. I said it's kind of like a primer. Like I think when I was explaining it to you, like it's sort of like she basically assumes like the reader knows like next to nothing like about race. So that was the only thing I would say. Like if you consider yourself to be like at least somewhat educated like on these topics, like you might be slightly insulted by some of the chapters because it's written for basically like the person who knows nothing, so that it can be an introduction. But I had just heard like so many people recommending this like in place of White Fragility, which was like number one on the bestsellers and everyone was talking about it, but it's also written by a white woman. So people were recommending this as an alternative so that you could support a Black author instead. And she actually, like, has a really unique perspective from, like, some of the different anti-racist reading that I've done because her mother's white. So I feel like that kind of gave her, like, just a unique, like, perspective on things because she's, like, lived the whole experience of like hearing things that like white people say, because that's like literally her mother. Like her mother like says some of these things that like make her cringe. And she's had to, like, basically educate her mother, just like she's had to, like, just how she educates people, like, through, like, her talks and her writing and everything. And she was, that in itself, I think, was a really interesting topic, because I actually know a lot of, like, white parents of Black children.
Yeah, me
and,
too.
Yeah, and it yeah. like, it always raises, like, interesting issues that I think people are afraid to talk about, in terms of, like, I guess what white parents think they are entitled to do because they have Black children. And she talks about that, like, in the book, like hair touching, for instance, like, lots of, like, microaggressions that a lot of people think don't apply to them because they have Black children.
Yeah.
So they think, you know, as good as their intentions might be, like, they don't understand that it's unwelcome, like, just walking up to someone, yeah. even if you think you know them well enough to touch them. Like, I've actually witnessed this happen. Like, I've witnessed white parents of Black children go up and touch other Black women's hair.
No.
And think that, and I know that they don't even, like, put it two and two together. And, like, I think maybe it's also, like, a generational thing. I think the fact that they have Black children and that they also, like, come from a generation that was very, like, being natural, embracing, like, natural Black beauty is gorgeous. And so they think that they're doing it with, like, because they're doing it with good intentions.
That makes it okay.
Complimenting that person. Yeah, that it makes it yeah. okay. So I thought, yeah, she touches on a lot of that stuff that I think is very, like, tricky. And that's something that I don't hear a lot of people talk about, because, yeah, like I said, I feel like people are kind of afraid to talk about some of those issues. People can get pretty sensitive, which that's the biggest thing that I've heard about this book, is just, like, if you are sensitive, like, this is definitely going to, like, no matter how woke, like, you feel like you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely going to, like, make you feel some type of way at some point, because she just talks about, like, so many different things and, like, puts things in such an interesting perspective, that it really challenges you, no matter where you're at, regardless of if you're someone who's, like, taken a lot of classes on race studies, like, in college, or if you're somebody who, like, you know, has never talked about race and you're someone who thinks you're, like, colorblind or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that part of the reason that people get upset, even probably me in certain situations, which I don't generally think I do, but I don't know, something might hit me some kind of way, you know, I don't yeah. know. But I think some of that stems from intent.
Yeah.
Because your intentions are good. And this is going to be a good segue whenever we talk about the book that I had to read. But I think because people think their intentions are good, that excuses certain behaviors or certain things. And it explains them, but it doesn't excuse them. So, like, mm-hmm. your intent was that you think her hair is beautiful, so you're going to touch it.
Yeah.
That you still shouldn't touch her hair. Like, that's, you know, yeah. and I think we get too caught up in that sometimes, where it's just because your intent was good doesn't mean maybe me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take that into consideration when we address yeah. certain things. And that's from any standpoint, not just race. That's, you know, we do, I don't know, what is it? Honesty without compassion is, I don't know. Now I can't think of the whole quote, but, like, where if you don't frame things the right way, or you don't consider the other person's feelings when you do something, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what your intent was.
Right.
So, and, you know, but as long yeah. as you're learning and you're trying to do better, and I think that's yeah. the thing that might help you, like, not get as offended when you read things like this, is just knowing that the author's intent is for you to do better and right. to educate you, not to insult you. So
yeah,
listen to it in that regard. So,
and I think the examples that she uses are really good ones, because of, like, a lot of the examples that she gives are about, like, her relationship with her mother, and, like, her mother not learning a lot of these things until later in life. And she talks about, like, how growing up, like, her mom never really wanted to talk about race. And it does make you wonder, like, how common of an issue that is with like white parents and black children. Like, because it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, do they just kind of like ignore it altogether and like sweep it under the rug? And I think that was very much like her mother's kind of attitude was, well, I never thought about these things because you're my daughter and you're amazing and you're beautiful and you're wonderful. And I think, you know, you're the best thing in the world because you're my daughter. And so she yeah. like never thought about, she never thought about things in this way, in the way that, the author kind of like forces you to look at things. And it was cool because she talks about like, because she finally started like educating her mom on like some of these things, like her mom's like now very active in, like the union, like at work.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah.
Yeah. And just like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Talking about like, she basically went from like saying very cringy things to like her black coworkers at work to like being an advocate.
Yeah. That's great. Good job. Yeah. Dad. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was cool to kind of like watch her like go through that transformation. But yeah, there was one scene like in particular that, going back to the hair thing, like I had told you, Chris Rock's good hair got brought up. And it was so funny because I immediately thought of this book because she like spends this whole, like she goes on this big whole rant about it. And I remember, like, I think I was literally standing in the shower and I was like, oh, like when she said, like, yeah. I was just like, oh, she went there. Because I literally remember in my college classes, like watching this movie and like afterward feeling like I just like all of a sudden understood like everything about why black women do their hair like a certain way. And I like, it's so cringy to like think back to, like, I remember even like going to work and like talking to like black coworkers about it and stuff. And she talks about that in this book, like about how white people always bring up this book to black people. And just like, so basically she's at dinner with like her coworkers and her boss like loudly from like across the table asks her like if her hair is real. Like, I have no idea like on what planet like somebody thinks that would be like an appropriate question to ask.
Oh my
Let
God.
Alone to shout it like across the table in front of just everyone. So yeah, she was talking about how she like literally wanted to crawl inside of a hole. and she tried to like play it off at first to like, because it was awkward for like everyone. And she's like, she's just trying to like.
Yeah, and it's your boss.
She's just trying to avoid the situations. So he asked it like three more times, like loudly. And so finally she said yes, and that's how like the Chris Rock good hair thing gets brought up, because they're like, oh good, because we watched this movie and we learned like that, you know, black women spend so much money like on their hair, and you know, that's so ridiculous, that's awful that you have to go through that and burn your hair and spend hundreds of dollars, and just goes on this long thing. And it's just, they're saying all these things without like making the connection that the reason why
is because they were told
are the beauty,
because we
those
suck.
Are the beauty standards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, so for like, for the white dude at the table to be saying, good for you for not doing that to your hair, and basically implying that she's better than other black women who do choose to relax their hair or wear wigs or whatever. Just, yeah, that whole implication was just very cringy.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Yeah.
God, there are times I could have done thousands of cringy things and never have known. And so, yeah, I'm not perfect, but I'm trying to be better and I'm trying to learn. And I just feel like some people don't even make the effort.
Yeah.
Like, I doubt he walked away knowing anything different.
Right.
Like, you know,
I think it goes back to like the whole like intent thing too, like where a lot of people think like because they had good intentions, he thought he was paying her a compliment by saying like, oh, good for you, like your hair is beautiful and that's great that like you don't damage it. Like he wasn't thinking of like it being a microaggression. And I think that's why microaggressions are like so complicated, and hard for a lot of white people to wrap their minds around, because they think that they're paying compliments or they're, you know, educating black people on something, you know, that it's just,
yeah. Don't let me be anyone out there. Don't let me be that person. Just be like, stop it right now. Cause I will, I will do my best. I don't want to be that guy.
Ugh. Yeah. So it's,
but that's an inappropriate thing to ask anybody in the first place. Like, so why would you think that then to like compound the issue? Gross.
I know. Really gross. And she has a lot of, because she lives in Seattle and works for like a tech company, I believe. I think most of her work experience has been in the tech industry. So she works with a lot of white men, and she talks about how a lot of times she is the only person of color and oftentimes is the only black woman. And so she has a lot of these examples of like very cringy experiences with white people and white men, like in particular. People that she like considered to be friends, and then they say something and she's just like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
mind exploding, you know?
Like, yeah, am I not standing here?
Is this real life? Is this really happening? So it's good that this book exists, because it is not the job of your black friends to explain these things to you, obviously. Very nice that she took the time to explain these things to her friends. But yeah, just white people, educate yourself, read these books. All right. We're going to be talking about My Friend Anna by Rachel Deloach Williams.
I don't know. I have so many thoughts on this book.
So I guess I'll start with the summary, because I feel like I keep forgetting to tell you guys what these books are about. So this is a kind of a memoir. The description on Goodreads cracks me up. You'll see why. Sex in the City meets Catch Me If You Can, and this astonishing true story of Anna Delvey, a young con artist posing as a German heiress in New York City, as told by the former Vanity Fair photo editor who got seduced by her friendship and then scammed out of more than $62,000.
If you guys could see my face. Okay. Do you want to start? Or do you want me to start?
I mean, I guess just like right off the bat, like the first, I have to throw in a Friends reference here, because we just always have to throw in a Friends reference. It made me think of that episode with Monica when her like identity is stolen, but like Monica's pretty cool about it. And she's like, hey, this girl's like doing all of the things that I wish like I had the confidence to do.
So I'm just going to let her continue to take advantage of me.
And this did not go that way. Not at all.
No.
Rachel was not having it. Not Rachel from Friends. Rachel, the author of this book.
Okay. So I know we talk a lot about that you can't judge somebody's personal experience, okay? So we talk a lot about how we dislike trying to, I don't know, to give stars to memoirs and things like that. I will trash the shit out of this, because immediately she starts talking and I'm like, like, I'm really sorry, Rachel. I'm sure you're a great person in real life, but in written life, am I alone in this? Do you agree?
No, you're not alone. Okay. I think so a lot of times, like, one of the things I struggle with, like you were saying, like with memoirs, it's somebody's like real experience. So it does feel mean to like be critical of it, but it also makes you wonder, like, to some of these people, like, were they, like, literally born yesterday? Like, what? Like, have you not, like, lived your life? Like, she's, I think, 30-something right now. I don't know. I mean,
she's 28 when this happened, right? So, I literally said, Lord, if I was this dumb at 28, forgive me. That's what I wrote.
And, again, like, I feel bad because I don't want this to come off as like victim blaming here. Which is why I wrote this note that I feel like kind of justifies us being critical of what she had to say in this book. And let me find it. I had said something about basically to the extent that like her, like what happened to her, like wasn't okay, but it's not at the end of the day, like she decided, like she made these decisions. Okay. Here, I found it. She wants you to know that she's a good girl raised by a family as wholesome as apple pie. And of course, no one deserves to be conned. We're not saying that she deserved anything that happened to her, but willfully lending someone money / loaning them your credit while on a luxury vacation is very different from, say, someone unknowingly having their identity stolen. Like, those are two very different things.
Yes. And I think the reason that it hit me the wrong way was, first of all, because going into this, I really thought that it was going to be more about the relationship between her and Anna. When it mostly was a regurgitation of text messages that had gone back and forth all saying the same thing. I think that's like 7 chapters. And that was extremely frustrating. Here's why. Because she poses this as if it is a way to tell people how this happened. And really, all that happens in the book is she name drops. She talks about what a great New Yorker she is. She's fabulous.
Take a shot every time she mentions a celebrity that she's worked with at Vanity Fair.
That's some location she's gone to, some vacation, some restaurant, some fancy restaurant.
She got brought up
My gosh.
I don't even know how many times.
Yeah. 47 times? Yeah. It is constant. It is constant. Yeah. Look at me and how great and fancy I am in this New York kind of vibe. But also remember, and I will tell you 400 times, that I am a nice, kind, polite person because I was raised in Tennessee. That it was very, like, kudos to her parents, because, like, the quote about her mom, yes, obviously your parents were wonderful people who raised you well, and that's awesome. But I think the reason this hits the wrong way for me to read it is because it is accusatory in the wrong way. Not that it feels accusatory that we, the people on the outside, like we are somehow at fault, like the world is somehow at fault, not Anna. Did you, I don't know, maybe that was only my interpretation, but that's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, the way that she phrases things, like I do think it rubbed people the wrong way. Because like to me, it shouldn't have mattered like who she is or what kind of person she is. Like I don't feel like she needed to go through all of this justification to prove that she's like a good person that didn't deserve this to happen to her, you know?
Because nobody
deserves this. You don't need to like spend like hours like telling us like how well you were raised by your family and how obviously like they instilled like better ethics in you than other people. Like that was it bothered me. Yeah, that bothered me a lot.
like the rest of the world, it would be fine if it happened to you because you're just an average person. But I am this perfect, kind, amazing person who also, so it especially didn't deserve to happen to me. And I was just struck when she put her work credit card down in the first place. I know,
because I don't think like
what
many normal average people in that situation would even like consider that. And
first of all, would have taken my work
like,
credit card out of vacation.
Credit limit, like on your work card?
That's $30,000+ or 60, you know, whatever it is, could just be.
And then not to get it pocket change to for just, her. And
but then to just say, don't charge it. This is just to hold it, remember? You get it in writing. Write this down. I need it in writing that you're not going to charge my card. That this is just for a hold.
Also, like, typically, and this was weird to me, too, because she talks about, like, what a well-traveled person she is. Like, typically, like, holds, like, are a percentage of, like, your stay. So she seems completely...
It's like $100
or whatever. Yeah, for like an average person. But I would assume if you're spending $30,000 to stay somewhere, like your hold is probably going to be a little more
$3,000.
And to me, that was wild that like she was even surprised that they like charged it at all. Like she really thought they were just going to like, they just were going to physically hold her card. Like that's not what a hold is, lady.
Yeah, but she legitimately was like, this is for you to physically hold. Okay,
hold.
Well, that's not a binding contract.
That's not how hotel holds work.
And that's not a binding contract.
They want to make sure you have the money to pay to stay there so that you don't do what you did, which is run out on your bill.
Yes, exactly. And I can see if you're 18 years old, 19 years old, 21 even, and you're like, you meet this person at a bar, you go out, you have a good time. They ask you to go on this fancy-ass vacation. First of all, really? Like, she comes and goes. She's not really your friend.
She's I wouldn't go, like, clear across the world with someone, like, I don't know that well. Again, not blaming her, but, like...
And maybe we're... No. But it's just that she acted like... Not that she acted like. She wrote as though we should all have... been like, well, of course,
naturally.
You go. It's...
And of course you put your credit card down.
Her whole tone is accusatory toward the world, as if other people are not as good as her, so she could see why this might happen to them, but not everyone else. I'm going to keep going back to that because it frustrated me so much.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then the name dropping, you don't really learn anything about Anna as a person, their relationship as friends... Yeah. My friend Anna is basically the most wrong title you could have for this in the world.
That was and that was a big disappointment too as someone who like followed the case because I was expecting to get new information out of this. And it was really just regurgitating like everything I had already read like in the news with the addition of like her just sharing like some text messages and then her like pseudoscientific analysis of Anna, basically, and talking about how wonderful her family is, like, in comparison. That's, like, mostly what I got out of this. Instead of, like, I kept, like, sticking around, like, hoping, like, juicy bits were going to come eventually.
Or like, hindsight's 2020, and here's this crazy thing that happened, and I should have paid closer attention to it. She kind of glossed over that stuff, too. Where, like, there's all these times when she got stiffed with the bill or... And I was very weirded out by things she said because I was, like, it kind of perpetuates... She goes to lunch, okay? And she thinks that Anna, like, is this unstable or crazy person because she ordered a bottle of wine and pasta for lunch without any guilt. What guilt are you supposed to feel about having pasta for lunch? Like, what is so significant about that? Then she runs around because she gets... And I think this was supposed to be an indication that she is passive, that she's a passive person, and so things happen to her. So she's a passive person, so they bring her lunch because she ordered
the
pasta, too, because, crazy day. But the cheese!
That was so funny
and
to me.
She gets pasta... Yes, she gets pasta. She gets pasta that's cheese. And it's just like fettuccine Alfredo or something. It's really heavy. And instead of saying, wasn't on the menu that this is a heavy, creamy dish. I'm lactose intolerant. Can you bring me something else? She leaves Anna at lunch. She goes flying around town to find a pharmacy to get lactate. Who gets up and
this is like the definition of like millennial problems, right? Though, like, this is like the stereotype that you think of when it's like people who are ill-equipped to deal with the real world because she was too afraid to just say something to the server. She would rather like run around trying to get lactate than inconvenience someone.
Then she gets back, finally, after she left Anna sitting there for who knows how long, and the waiter comes over with corrected pasta. And then we're supposed to be like, see, look how great Anna was, because Anna was able to say, correct this. Please, she's lactose intolerant. Please bring her some different pasta. Like, I'm just...
I mean, I'm not advocating for food waste here, but, like, yeah, it's...
Read the menu better? I don't know. Like, oh.
Don't be so awkward.
But it was just... Don't leave your dinner... Don't leave your lunch companion to go... I mean, it's one thing if you got sick while you're sitting there. Yeah. That's one thing. And you're like, oh, I gotta excuse myself. It's another thing to just be like, I can't say that I can't have cheese. I have to go run around town to find a lactate.
Yeah.
It just, and all the things. And I think part of it that hit me wrong, too, I think is because of the time that we're reading this in. So I'm reading this, and I'm like, you are so privileged.
Yeah. Which she really
is uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable, especially because she does not acknowledge it until the very end. She kind of does in the epilogue, but throughout the whole thing, she really doesn't talk about that at all.
Like, she just gets a lung. Like, somebody she knows is like, oh, here's $60,000 to fix your problem.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Like, I mean, maybe she's doing it right and I'm doing it wrong. I don't know anybody who's just going to hand me $60,000 to pay my credit card bill. But it's that she never says, I'm a very fortunate and privileged person. So it actually worked out better for me than it would for most people, because $60,000 of debt, I was still eating, going out to lunch. I was
still living
I still had my job.
Yes, she didn't lose her job. She continued to live alone in her Manhattan apartment. She didn't have to move. Like, she chose not to move somewhere else or, like, to get a roommate. She was dating someone and didn't move in with them. Like, all these things that, like, if you were, like, the normal person was in this situation, like, if you were really, like, that strapped and you felt like you were going broke, like, you would be, you know, moving back home, like, with your parents, or, like, at the very least, getting a roommate or something, like, or moving to a cheaper apartment. I don't know.
She just keeps calling Amex and is like, I can't pay it. Like, what? That was so beyond me. And when she says she wakes up and has a panic attack and her boyfriend is like rubbing her back, whatever, Nick or whichever one it is, Noah, somebody. But she says, I'll never be able to have a house. I'll never be able to pay this off. So I'll never be able to have a house. I'll never be able to have kids. And I'm like, everybody else who's been in this situation is like, I will never be able to get credit for a car to get to and from work. I will never be able to afford rent. My credit history will look so bad. I will be evicted from places. Like, I won't be able to buy groceries. I won't be able to have a place to live.
I'm going to starve. But instead, like, she goes straight to, like, I'm not going to be able to buy a house someday. Well, guess what? Welcome to being a millennial, and we all have hundreds of thousands of dollars in student debt, and none of us can buy houses. Like,
and again, this is not her fault. Lucky her, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's not her fault. Yeah. But it is
it's her fault for not owning up. Yeah.
Present.
Yeah.
It's how you present yourself in the situation, and to not acknowledge that you had an amazing, I mean, she does acknowledge that her friends were great.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And that she had this, you know, Catherine or whoever who's her, like, work person, like, was her boss and now is, like, her whatever. But she does admit that she just knows this really awesome, like, attorney guy that she went to college with, so he's gonna help her, and then he's gonna yes, all of those things are great, and she deserved to have that help because this was a thing that should not have happened. Anna sucks. That's hands down, Anna's a bad person, or a messed up person or whatever. But she just presents herself in a way that I was like, I could shake you because other people have, like, real problems. And you're like, ugh, woe is me. I still drove down while all this is happening. I still got to go on a vacation.
Yeah, several. I feel like she goes on several vacations, like, during this. Like, she flies out to California to, like, go to, like, a friend's shower or something. Then she, like, continues to visit her family, like, in Tennessee throughout the whole thing.
How are you still getting credit? That's my question. How many credit cards do you have? Like,
baffled. Like, who's paying, like, for the... And, I mean, maybe she racked up a bunch of points because she travels all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Although she didn't use any of those points to go to Morocco, so... Who knows?
And that's the other thing. How Anna is portrayed in this is that she comes off as a con artist. You never understand or get the feeling that they were friends, like real friends.
Yeah, because I mean, they really were never that close. Like, they didn't have enough time to develop like a close friendship. And that was another thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way is like Rachel talks a lot about, like, she uses like her relationships as a way to demonstrate like what a good person she is, because she's saying, look at like, look at all these friends I have and the support system. Like, that shows that I am a good person. And, you know, Anna doesn't have anyone, so she's a bad person. And, but yet Rachel's spending like the majority of her time running around with this woman, Anna, who she just met, who she doesn't know that well, even though she supposedly has all of these other friends. And she doesn't want you to think that she didn't get at least a little bit caught up in the fact that she thought she was hanging out with an heiress.
Yeah.
That she wasn't enjoying these fancy lunches that were paid for, and she wasn't enjoying going to the spa and, you know,
spending all the time in the hotel and the, yeah.
Yeah. Like, come on.
You loved it. Yeah. I would hopefully admit, because there are situations like that where you're just like, here is this world that I can't normally access. It's going to be amazing. Let's get in there, see what happens.
Right.
But at a New York bar, sure, I went to the part that's roped off normally, or whatever she did, because she was talking about how exclusive the bars were and whatever. But, you know, so you got to go to the basement part that nobody else gets to go to, and it's all exclusive, and how exciting that is. And I'm like, sure. Yeah. You just roll along with somebody you meet, because you're like, hey, we can go to this really cool place because there's this really cool thing. I've actually done that when I was in Tennessee I was in Nashville for a New Year's Eve, and a friend of a friend was this really, like, wealthy person. We got to do all these. Yeah, she's real connected in the music scene, and we got to do some cool shit because of her. But I wouldn't be like, okay, well, now she's my best friend. I trust her with everything, and I'm going to go to Marrakesh with her. Like, there are circumstances that you have to consider.
And then when everything hits the fan, I'm going to act as if, like, I wasn't getting anything out of the relationship, when it's like, it's pretty clear, like, they were both taking advantage of each other. It's just Rachel didn't realize that there was nothing to really take from Anna, because Anna didn't have anything to give.
Yes.
But had she have had all this money that she pretended to have, Rachel was gladly, you know, taking $30,000 free meals and free vacations, you know? Yeah. It's like, it's just, you found out that she doesn't actually have that money, and now it's a problem, and now you want to look like you were the only person that was being taken advantage of in that situation.
Yeah. When she opened a bunch of doors for you and all kinds of, you know, fun things that you got to do.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just frustrated because it's so, I mean, she is the victim, so it should be from the victim standpoint. But it is very much like when she goes to the police.
Yeah.
And the policeman is like, you signed for it. Like, you know, and Amex is like, you signed for it.
You signed for it, yeah.
And everybody else is like, you signed for it. And she thinks that, or she presents it as if the world is against her.
Yeah.
No, but everything that they have to view and see is that you paid for it. You paid for the trip. That's what it looks like. You were there in Marrakesh. They even asked you, were you present in Marrakesh? And you're like, yes.
Yep.
Did you give them your credit card? Yes. Is this your signature on this itemized list? Yes. Like, that's very different than average Joe runs his card at the gas station, and then somebody takes all of his information and steals his identity. Like, it's,
yeah.
It was just a very different feel, and she never acknowledged that she had so much help.
In my notes when I was listening to it, I wrote, this isn't like going out for drinks with a friend and picking up the tab. This would be like going to a car dealership with your friend and them asking you to loan them all the money that they need to buy the car because they lost their wallet.
Yeah.
And so, like, because that was the equivalent in my world. Like, that would be like if one of my friends was like, let's go get a car. And I show up and she's like, I didn't bring my wallet. Can you buy this car for me? And I'd be like, what?
I'm sorry, but no. I love you. I want you to have that car. but no.
And then, you know, she gets all panicky because the car dealers are being pushy. So she just throws her car down. She's like, here, just take it. And then later she's like, why did I do that? And she's like calling Amex, like, please, like, get rid of this charge. Like, I was just scared of the car dealers. Those mean, mean car dealers. That's basically what happened to this Marrakesh hotel. It's just like, and I get it. Like, you're in a foreign country. Maybe if she hasn't traveled, like, too many foreign countries, like, she probably was scared. And as a woman, like, in a situation where, like, it is intimidating if there's a bunch of men, like, ganging up on you and you're at a hotel and in a strange
standing
place,
in your hotel room. Yeah,
I totally get all of those things. Again, it was just very difficult to relate as an average person to just having the ability to even call my credit card company and asking them to increase my credit limit for that situation, which is what she ultimately had to do.
Yeah.
She didn't have enough credit to even put down. Like, she called and they're just like, sure, how much do you need?
And how? No credit card that I have. No one would do that for me. I can't fathom. First of all, she never explains that relationship, like how they got to Marrakesh. Yeah. Like, I never really thought there was any... like, why they were there and why those specific people were there.
Oh, because Anna wanted to make a documentary.
Documentary. Okay. I was just...
So she was bringing her documentary crew that she, like, found.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So the documentary crew is there. And they never were like, we're a documentary crew. This is work. So why isn't she paying for my expenses? Like, why am I not being able to... It was just such a weird...
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of red flags just when they were, like, checking in at the airport, because Rachel was then also having to cover the expense of, like, all the camera equipment that the crew was bringing because they were like, oh, we're not paying for this. So, again, it kind of just, like, I mean, yeah, I guess it's nice that, like, you were helping people out in that situation, but also... it wasn't your responsibility. And I feel like at some point you needed to step back and be like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on? Like, Anna, are you making a movie? Are you paying these people?
Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
But I think that's part of it too. She defends Anna's like the end. And I'm like, there's people. I just would hope not. Maybe it would happen to me. I'm generally a decent human person. And I like most people. So I always say I don't like people. I don't like society. I like people individually. But I can get along pretty much anybody. So maybe it would happen to me, but I'd like to think it wouldn't. And I wish I was like, so many things happened in New York before they ever even went to Marrakesh. And like Anna disappears back to Germany or wherever she actually went and then comes back to New York. And there are like months between when they hung out. I could talk about this book forever because I'm so frustrated with it. And I did feel like Rachel needed better friends because there were other people who had these interactions with Anna and everybody was just like, oh, it's fine. Like, do you remember that book, the memoir that came out, A Million Little Pieces or whatever? I remember the cover had sprinkles on it.
And it,
And it was completely false. It's a fake thing. That's what this read like. And I think that's why I was so negative. Because I did, when A Million Little Pieces, when everybody was all about it and reading it, whatever, I was like, this is terrible. I didn't like it then. Then I found out it was false and I was like, that explains why I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
This reads like that. There's nothing authentic in this at all.
No.
Because she is just name dropping and place dropping.
And what's the point?
That doesn't tell me anything about your relationship with Anna or how, and you never explain how Anna made you feel like her friend.
Right.
All you explain is that Anna bought you stuff.
Yeah.
And that, so my friend Anna, is she your friend? Like,
yeah, she'd just be like some girl, Anna. And I also wrote down, like, because she kept bringing up, like, Anna being Russian, which also rubbed me the wrong way because I was like, are we like living in the 80s again? And this is like Red Scare, like, I don't know. Like, it was really weird to me. It was like, I wrote down, like, she sounds like She tries to make Anna sound like she's Zoya the Destroyer and she's Liberty Bell from GLOW. Like, she just Miss American Pie. And Anna's just, like, this horrible Russian woman who's just, like, out to con all the Americans.
Yeah, and, because...
Because
you think she's German. First of all, like, the whole first half, you're supposed to think Anna's German. Then all of a sudden, when you find out that maybe her dad is Russian, now it's like, yeah, she's evil. She's absolutely... Like, she's 100%
evil. Now she's
evil.
Anna the Russian. Like, that makes her a villain.
Yeah, I didn't care for it. Did not care for this book. I don't know if you can tell. Didn't care for it. I mean, if you want to hate read with us, which I guess a lot of people that I know were like, after you guys talked about the one, I want to read it so that I can hate it too.
It is kind of entertaining, especially like if you weren't aware of the story. Like, it is a very wild story.
Yeah.
So I think if you went into it like not knowing anything about Anna, like you didn't read anything about this when it happened, like I don't know how many years ago was this like in the news. I was following it because I was like fascinated with it.
2017, yeah.
Like I feel like a lot of people were just like, this is like this, like the fake era shirts, like it was like a big thing. Like people were like, this is crazy. Like this girl was a woman, sorry, this woman was able to just like convince all of New York that she was an heiress, and people just went along with it. And it's like, I feel like that says a lot about society.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot, there's a deeper message here.
Yeah.
Than what these people are taking away from it, because certainly I don't think Rachel took away that lesson from it. But I think like us as average people, we're looking at all these like wealthy New Yorkers thinking, bunch of dummies. Yeah.
So superficial. She's allowed to be part of your clique because she said she was an heiress. Okay, you cool.
Just, yep. You just wanted to hang out with a princess.
Yeah.
Should we move on to trashing our TBRs?
No.
Want to keep talking about this? Oh, yeah. No. Oh, my gosh. Dawn. Why? Why do I keep forgetting about Dawn? Oh, my gosh.
I think because you weren't able to access your horoscope read.
I think so.
You're just still waiting for it to happen. And I'm like, but mine did, though. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm just, like, not in that mindset. Yeah. So I guess I should clarify. So last time on the last episode, we decided to do, like, the trash or TBRs differently, where we did them based on our astrological signs. So mine was... The Hate You Give, which I had ordered at the beginning of this month and still have yet to receive. So now I'm like consistently behind, it seems, in every episode. So I will be reading that for the next one. But Melinda got to read Dawn by Octavia Butler because she's a Cancer, and apparently
I don't know. I can't remember.
Bustle.com said Cancer is a down-to-earth sign who fears change, abandonment, and leaving their comfort zone. Although their practicality and enjoyment of the little things can make them difficult to scare, there's one book that will hit all of Cancer's horror high notes, and that is Dawn. So did it hit all your horror high notes?
No.
No?
No. It wasn't... Okay, but we all know... At this point, I've said it a few times, but I don't generally relate to being a Cancer for some reason. So, I think now that you read it back, the like fear of change and all of that. But I think any sign picking this up would be like, yeah, this is a frightening situation to find yourself in. So I don't have the synopsis in front of me, but Dawn is essentially about, that there is an apocalypse on Earth, and this alien race comes and finds them and pulls up, and then Lilith, the main character, is chosen to repopulate Earth. So that's the grand scheme of what's happening. So this is apparently a series, which I was not aware of, but it's a series. I love Octavia Butler. I've read other stuff of hers, so her writing is excellent, as usual. The world building is really on point. Like, it's an insane world that gets built and is this crazy situation. And then the characters are obviously very well done. So there's Lilith, and then there's her, like, Nikanj is her, like, the alien race, the Onkali. Okay. I don't know if I'm saying any of that right, but that's the, and then she has her specific one that, like, they're all kind of paired off.
Gotcha.
And you're put into this, all the people that they saved from Earth are in this deep sleep, and that's why it's called the awakening, when you are brought out of the deep sleep. So Lilith is, like, the first one brought out, and then she's supposed to, like, prep everybody else. She's supposed to pick who's supposed to go to Earth first and, like, do all this stuff. And so it's, that's what's happening overall. But it is very detailed relationship-wise. There's not a whole lot of story to this one, actually. It's a lot of setup for what's going to come next. There are exciting things that happen. It keeps your attention the whole time. It's extremely well written. But it was very much, this is the explanation for why the next books are going to come. So,
yeah.
It has a huge eugenics vibe.
Oh.
There is a lot of tampering with humans and taking away things and adding things and, like, developing
to create this, like, ultimate race.
Not really an ultimate race, just a better human race, right?
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Better. But it hits xenophobia, because Lilith is, like, terrified of the aliens because they are hideous, in her opinion. So there's this, like, and they're this other race. She doesn't know what to do with them, and they blow her mind, basically. She comes around. But... So there's that. Then there's misogyny, because now we're back to, like, where men and women and whatever stands. Homophobia, because the Onkali do not all have genders or sexes assigned to them. So there's some mating that happens.
Quote that you sent me, that was like a insult that one of them said to the other one, because they like assumed they had gender.
Yeah. She asks if he's a he or she.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's rude that you would assume that I have a sex. And I was like, yes, right. It is rude. But
alien burn.
Yeah. But so it has that. And then it also has a trigger warning for, even though it's aliens and it's bizarre, there is, like, a rape situation. I mean, so she hits all of these things. And then there's social hierarchy. The aliens are basically saying you suck because you believe in a hierarchy. There's no hierarchy. You're all whatever.
Yeah.
So there is this very, she essentially creates an alien world that explains to people what it was like to be a slave. And it's all these elements of, you know, eugenics. So, like, messing with people to try to have the best version of humanity. And then it amplifies the question for you on what humanity is. Because what the aliens change in humans, does that mean that they're no longer humans? What is humanity? And so that's a really cool element of it. And there's also, like, a warped mutuality between Lilith and her Onkali, Nikanj, where it had, like, a, because Octavia Butler wrote this very much to be like, this is how slaves felt. Like, they're escaping, there's a master race situation happening, there's all of this is happening, they're being controlled. They had no choice in the matter. They didn't ask to be picked up from Earth by the aliens, like, transported to this other place. And so that was very intentional on her part. And so there is this addressing of, like, Lilith, other people are upset with her. Other humans are upset with her because she has a good relationship with the Onkali. And so, I mean, it is extremely well done and very thought provoking, but also it's very much a setup for maybe something exciting, more exciting that's going to happen along the way. But I did enjoy it. So good job, Bustle, for telling me what to read.
You're like, I have no idea if it has anything to do with my zodiac sign. But,
but it was great.
Thank you for recommending Octavia Butler. Exactly. You kind of got lucky with that one.
Yeah, I did. And Lilith was like the mom character and aren't like, she kind of cares about everybody. So maybe that's the cancer thing. And the like being she's afraid of change. So she doesn't want. Yeah, I can see those things, I guess. But mostly it was just an awesome sci-fi read. So you should read it.
Do you plan on reading the rest of the trilogy?
If I have time, series? Yeah.
I don't know how many there are. I think it's a trilogy, right?
I think it's three. Yeah, I'd be into it to see what happens next. Because it's definitely intriguing and makes you want to keep going. So,
yeah.
So excellent work on the horoscope read.
I wish I'd gotten mine.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. Would have been nice.
Was that from Book Outlet? Where is that from?
Well, I wasn't going to say. But
I'm sorry. Their shipping times have been outrageous.
Yes, we're not sure what's going on. It might be USPS. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
All I know is it's been like a month since I ordered it. I don't know what is going on. But yeah, I may just have to see like if the library has it or something. But anyway, so for this go around, I'm just gonna, at first I was like, well, maybe I skip getting another book because I'm behind again, but you know, I'm a masochist, so I'm just gonna bring all the books on and I'll just read them all. It's fine.
We'll figure it out.
So this time, this time around.
Allie keeps losing her headphones, by the way. That's what that sound effect was. She's done a great job keeping it inside up until this point.
I'm really trying hard over here. I'm struggling. So, who wants to go first? Who's trashing what?
I just talked a lot about Dawn, so you can go first.
Okay. All right, I'm going to trash What Should Be Wild by Julia Fine. By your face, I don't know what to expect. What was that reaction?
I remember I did not finish that one.
Oh, that's so the one I DNF'd. Started to read it. See, this is the problem because you don't update your Goodreads enough. So I don't actually know what you've read, what you haven't.
Actually, I think I do know what happens with that. It's on my DNF shelf, but I don't think it.
Didn't take it off of your. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've noticed that too. I think you have to manually like take it off of your TBR. Okay. Well, that was the book I'm trashing. I guess you can let it count because you still have to trash it.
That sounds great.
And that's the one that I said, yeah, I guess you were maybe one of the people who told me that it wasn't good because I feel like there was a lot of hype around it. And then it started getting bad reviews. And you may have possibly also like told me at one point, I just forgot that it was you.
I trashed it for you. Yeah. On one of these episodes, I trashed it. I think that's what I trashed. Isn't that what I told you not to read?
No, I don't think so. Was it? I thought it was the night circus. Not the night circus, the other circus. What's the other circus?
I did trash the other circus one.
Yeah, you trashed a circus book.
That was the first time. I don't know what we've done here.
You trashed Water for Elephants. And then, did you trash it in the last episode?
I think I did. So neither of us like it. That's what we're saying. Get it out of here. Get it out.
Wow, we are really failing this time around. Oh my gosh. Maybe we should actually like go back and, you know, look at the notes for our last episode before we plan these things. Oops.
Note to future selves. We're just muddling along. It's fine.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
We're doing our best. We're trying.
So are you still trashing it? That's what you're trashing?
Because
I think I confused you because I said I was going to try to finish it because I don't like to DNF things. But if you trash it, then I can be like, I don't have to try to finish it.
There we go. That's a good justification for trashing it. You'll never be tempted to pick it up again.
That sounds great. What am I replacing it with?
I'm really excited to tell you what I'm replacing it with because, so in our book club meeting, when we were talking about Asada, and we got on the whole topic of Elvis, it reminded me of a book that I keep like seeing everywhere. And I don't know why, like it hadn't clicked with me before that I'm like, Melinda needs to know about this. And this is also tough because I also had another really good one that I wanted to give you today, but I'm going to save that one. It is called Graceland by Chris Abani. I believe that's how you say his last name. And this was a 2004 novel, which tells the story of a teenager named Elvis who is trying to get out of the ghettos of Nigeria. And it depicts the poverty and violence, how it affects the everyday lives of Elvis and his family. That's kind of just like the short synopsis here. But I've heard, like, I keep seeing this book places. And then also, Graham Sillars Reads Books, which is a booktuber that I follow on YouTube. He reviewed it recently and recommended it. So, yeah, it sounds really interesting. This Nigerian boy who's named after Elvis. And he's an Elvis and like impersonator too. Did it say that in the description that I read?
Did not.
Yeah, I feel like that description was very, not very descriptive. I'm pretty sure that he is. Yeah, he's a teenage Elvis impersonator.
That's amazing. I will enjoy this book.
If you look it up, you can see the cover. He like is looking all tough with like the cigarette like hanging out the side of his mouth.
I love
it. Cute. Yeah. So I was really excited about that one.
I'm very excited. Yes. Okay. I am trashing. You ready for this? But you don't even remember putting it on your thing. It's called Jamestown by Matthew Sharp.
Oh, yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
It chronicles a group of settlers from the ravaged island of Manhattan departing blah, 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 blah. They head to what's left of I-95. It's basically like they're recolonizing. It features historical characters, including John Smith, Pocahontas, and others. It's like a reimagination of history, generally like. But
yeah, those are usually interesting. Well, I shouldn't say they're usually good. I feel like they usually suck me in with like just the description. I'm like, okay, this sounds like it's gonna be really cool. Yeah, but
maybe not.
Yeah,
but this one has only 360 ratings and it is rated low. It's only 3.08. So I think that you should replace it. I have two. I don't know which one to pick. I'm gonna let you pick.
Okay.
Okay. So we have Kindred.
Oh,
by Octavia Butler.
Yep.
Which is already on your list, but you could bump it up.
Yes, indeed.
And if this will load, I will tell you what that one's about. This is the first science fiction written by a Black woman. Kindred has become a cornerstone of Black American literature. This combination of slave memoir, fantasy, and historical fiction is a novel of rich literary complexity. Having just celebrated her 26th birthday in 1976, California, Dana, an African-American woman, is suddenly and inexplicably wrenched through time into antebellum Maryland.
Yeah,
so
sounds it's really interesting.
Yeah, so it's a historical, like, it's the same kind of vibe as Jamestown. Yeah. But then, I also think that you had mentioned about trying to read more YA because of, you know, teaching and stuff like that. So, I really enjoyed The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. And it is the story of Junior, a budding cartoonist growing up on the Spokane Indian Reservation. Determined to take his future into his own hands, Junior leaves his troubled school on the res to attend an all-white farm town high school where the only other Indian is the school mascot. Heartbreaking, funny, and beautifully written, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, which is based on the author's own experiences, coupled with poignant drawings by Ellen Forney, that reflect the character's art, chronicles the contemporary adolescence of one Native American boy as he attempts to break away from the life he was destined to live.
Hmm.
Very cool.
Okay, so Native American. When you said the title at first, I thought Indian, like India.
Yeah. It's dated language for a reason for the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, did this book come out like a long time ago?
No, but it's about intentionally. It takes place back then, you would still use that language. It's like
an intentional choice.
Yeah, because it's like his actual, based on his experience, the author, yeah.
That makes sense. Huh. Well, I don't know. I feel like because I was so salty about not getting to read Octavia Butler before. I feel like I just have to do it now. Especially, like, you've got me in the mood because you just got to read one of her books. So, seems only fair.
I love it. And this is her first one. It's awesome. And I'm...
Yeah. And it's been... Yeah, I feel like it's been on my TBR for a while. So, I just need to... I need to do it.
Yeah. Bump that up. Awesome.
Yeah, and just before we go really quick, for the next episode, I thought we'd maybe like tease a couple of the books that you guys have to look forward to. So aside from Hate U Give, which I'll be reading, and Kindred, I'm also currently reading Rodham, which is like a retelling of, or it's a retelling, I guess. Yeah, it's like an alternate history, like if Hillary Clinton hadn't married Bill Clinton. I was gonna DNF it, but I think I'm gonna go through and just finish it. So I'll probably be talking about that one next time. And, Too Much and Never Enough, The Trump Tell All by his niece. I'm like 60% of the way already through that one. So that's what you guys have to look forward to next time. And you're reading Mexican Gothic currently, right?
I am reading Mexican Gothic, and I hope to get to the All Souls trilogy. At least start it. Yeah. And we'll be reading The Regrets for book club. So
yes, we will. Yeah. It'll probably be a while before we talk about it, but yes, I'm excited. I think I already got it, so I could go ahead and start it now.
Yeah. Mine comes tomorrow. So
yay. Yeah, so if any of you guys want to read along with us and read The Regrets, be sure to check out our virtual book club called Brunch with Books. Each month we vote on a book to read based on that month's theme, and August is Romance Awareness Month. And Melinda always comes up with a fun recipe based on the book. Roderick always comes up with a fun like cocktail recipe for us to drink. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and we meet on the last Sunday of every month, and it's virtual, so you can join us from wherever.
Wherever. Yep. All right.
Cheers.
Bye, guys.
That's all from us today, folks. Stick around and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're currently using to listen to us so that you'll receive updates whenever we upload a new episode. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Novels with Nightcaps, where you can find links to our book club, website, and more. Until next time, happy reading. Cheers!